Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Outspoken with White and Jordan. 100% engagement.
It's a total disrespect.
Download, stand well back, listen.
Jim White and Simon Jordan.
I don't see that view.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. I'm Jim White, and today myself and Simon Jordan and Stuart Pearce discuss Leicester City's charge by the Premier League for breaching financial rules. Has English football become a bit of a laughingstock? What's becoming more important here, sporting merit or the quality of your lawyer? Elsewhere, England take on Brazil tomorrow evening, live on Talk Sport, and we preview the match with Stuart and South American football expert Tim Vickery. Meantime, after Nike and the FA upset a large part of the nation with the St. George's flag playful update, what's got the bigger chance in causing a climb down? A boycott of the shirt from the fans or a boycott of the shirt from the players? You're listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. A potential pending Premier League table at the end of the season and a promoted Leicester beginning in the top flight on minus points. Yeah, that actually could happen. Has English football become a bit of a laughingstock now? Leicester City said to be this morning considering legal action after being charged by the Premier League and referred to an independent commission for breaching, yes, profit and sustainability rules and failing to submit audited finances. If found guilty, they could face a points deduction from next season. So just as with Everton fans nervous about all of this and Forest fans nervous about all of this, Leicester City fans, no doubt, nervous about all of this morning. 8 years after winning the Premier League title, how has it come to this? I'm going to get Simon's take in a moment, but a short time ago we spoke to our friend FFP expert Stefan Borsen and said to him straight, what is the worst case scenario for Leicester?
They seem to be going very hard on the sort of legal defence. The worst case scenario when you resist in the way that they seem to be resisting is that you effectively sacrifice the mitigation that Nottingham Forest received. So you immediately effectively say, we're kissing goodbye to 2 or 3 points of mitigation. What that means, of course, is that it puts you straight in towards the top end of the range that is now being established in the cases that we've seen. So we're sort of seeing a range of 3 to 8 points for a significant breach of PSR. And I can tell you, looking at the likely numbers, this is going to be in the range of probably a £40 million breach at the level above Everton. So you would think that they're resisting very hard because they know that this is not a situation where they could effectively have a minor breach and then get a discount for cooperation, which would effectively make it a 0 point deduction or a 1 point deduction. They obviously fear a very big deduction and are taking a view that a 2 to 3 point mitigation for cooperation is only going to get them part of the way down the road.
Stefan, is this purely a timetable issue? Why have Everton and Forest been charged and punished in the same season, but with Leicester, talk of punishment will not be until next season?
Well, it's the rules. So Leicester City are captured by the old rules, and the old rules don't have the expedited timetable that the rules that came in after they were relegated. They have only just effectively fessed up their numbers for 22-23. They resisted showing the numbers to the Premier League, presumably because they say, well, they're not a Premier League club and therefore they don't need to. And it will be a sort of slower, probably a more tortuous legal battle that will resolve itself probably sometime in the middle of next season.
Have Leicester nonetheless got themselves an argument when they claim the Premier League has no jurisdiction over them as they are not a Premier League club? They are in the EFL.
Well, they obviously think they've got an argument. I mean, it's very difficult to decipher from putting together the EFL rules and the Premier League rules. There have been clubs, including Leicester, who have been charged for seasons where they were in the EFL when they were in the Premier League. And historically, Leicester were a club that settled with the EFL in respect of PSR breaches for periods when they were in the other division. So it's not without precedent, but it is complicated as to who governs the PSR regime for a season that's gone, where you get relegated, and in this complexity, where they're about to get promoted again. So all bets are off. And clearly, Leicester's KC, who I think is Nick DeMarco, who we know acted for Nottingham Forest, clearly believes that they have some good arguments to run, such that they can risk throwing in the bin any possibility of mitigation for cooperation and early admission.
That was Stefan Borson a short time ago. Simon, like Stefan, you are all over this. Of course you are. But we've got an added ingredient to this, because here we have an EFL club who are being pulled up by the Premier League. There's a different element to this debate all round, isn't
there? But they weren't an EFL club at the time. And it's an interesting one. Whether you agree with the principle of financial fair play, and I agree with it to some extent, but I think it's a blunt instrument that is unsophisticated and causing more problems. And the reasons why people are getting so angry about it now is, once upon a time, they were quite comfortable getting financial fines. Oh, we'll take £20 million if that's what we've got to do. Now they're getting sporting sanctions and points. The temperature's risen, and people like Nick DeMarco are sitting there with their cash registers taking in huge amounts of money because they're representing clubs. Leicester ran an argument that the rules suggest that what happens is, if you're in the Premier League in March, or in a league at a particular time, then you're governed by their rules. But there was a slippage in when Leicester got relegated. As a result of getting relegated, the EFL requires you to provide your financial forecasts for the ensuing year by November.
Yeah.
And Leicester didn't want to. And the reasons why Leicester, I would imagine, didn't want to is because the moment they submitted their financial forecasts for the ensuing year, the EFL were going to say, you're going to be in breach. And so we need you to do something about that. And that would have meant Leicester would have had to be selling players in January, and they didn't want to. And Nick DeMarco successfully managed to achieve that argument by saying, well, you weren't in the jurisdiction, so you're not in the jurisdiction. So now the other argument is, and so the Premier League waited for the EFL case, waited for that outcome. The EFL were unsuccessful, and Nick DeMarco was successful on behalf of Leicester. And then the Premier League stepped up and said, well, hang on, you were in the Premier League in that season. You are obliged to meet the financial fair play obligations that you signed up for as clubs, whether you like them or not. Right? And it would be very interesting to see all these clubs that are crying now.
Yeah, yeah.
Did they vote for the rules that were put in place? Because if they didn't, and their voting record consistently says they voted for these regulations, then they're bloody fools to themselves.
Yeah.
So now you've got a situation where Leicester have undoubtedly breached financial fair play.
Undoubtedly.
They will have breached financial fair play. That's why they're being charged. And now it's about jurisdiction. And so the Premier League are saying, you were a member club of ours in March of last year. And so as a result of that, that season qualifies you to be judged by the three-year cycle, and you are looking like you're breaching financial fair play, so you face that charge.
Stefan thinks it's a more than a £40 million breach, more than Everton.
Oh, I think it's a significant breach. I think it's a really, really significant breach.
Here's the thing. I mean, to me, as always, the important people in all of this are the fans who are stuck in this. They're looking at it from distance, as we are, although you're right across it, and all credit to you. But Stefan Borson, who's across it, says this could be a long, tortuous legal argument. Leicester fans want to know now. Well, what do we face?
Well, tough, because that's the reality of the world that we're now in. The point is that the reasons why it would be a long and tortuous argument is because you're going to wheel lawyers in to argue about technicalities. They're going to argue about jurisdiction. They are going to say that the Premier League have no right to be doing this. The Premier League are not singling Leicester out. The rules are the rules are the rules. Yeah. And Leicester have had their way and said to the EFL, no, we're not coming down to abide by your rules, because actually in March of this year, we weren't under your rules, so we don't have to provide you with our financial statements for the ensuing year in November. So we're not going to give them to you. And the reasons why I would assume they didn't want to give them to them is that the EFL would say, but you're going to breach. So in order to fix that breach, we're going to suggest to you that you might be having to sell players. Leicester didn't want that, because Leicester's sole focus in life is to get back to the Premier League, and they certainly don't want the EFL meddling with that opportunity.
Mm.
Then they go back to the Premier League, so now you're under the Premier League's jurisdiction. And you clearly breached it in the Premier League terms, so you suffered a consequence. Now, the other argument is financial fair play strangling the Premier League? Is the Premier League bringing itself into disrepair and disrepute? There's an argument it could be.
Do you think it is?
Well, I don't think it's a great look. I don't think it's a look of a league that's being so illuminating and so investable and so trailblazing in its financial landscape and its product quality and everything about it. But again, I suggest that there's been plenty of time for clubs like Leicester and Palace and West Ham and all the other clubs that don't feature in the top six to have lobbied the changes and say, no, we don't want these rules.
Yeah.
Jim, can I just give you a manager's point of view? When I was at Manchester City and I was doing my pro licence business courses and whatever, I sat with the chief exec at Manchester City, who went through the books of Manchester City as a football club and an entity at the time. And he outlined to me exactly what a financial mess the football club were in. And I sat there as a manager, and it opened my eyes, to be honest with you, about where the club is and sustainability of the club. And you sit back as a manager and you think to yourself, you know what, this isn't about me putting pressure on them as owners and whatever to supply me with more money. This is sustainability for a football club to be there in hundreds of years' time. Now, if these rules are put in place for that reason and that reason alone, to make sure that there is a football club.
But there's a better way to do it, Stuart.
Yeah.
If you want sustainability, then ask these owners to put up significant bonds, because that deals with the sustainability argument. Whilst I like the idea of levelling up and not allowing people to filter down the problems of the Premier League onto the Championship, League One and League Two, if you're worried about the sustainability side of things, say to a Middle Eastern consortium or American consortium, you want to spend money like a drunken sailor? Okay, you put £1 billion up as equity or as a bond, and there's your sustainability argument.
Yeah.
You've got to get the balance right between investability and a wonderful league.
I would take that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That makes the football club still sustainable.
I hear what you're saying, Stuart. I have to say to you, I'm looking at the messages coming in. Next to no sympathy from fans of other clubs for Leicester. Ricky, a Coventry fan, same old Leicester, always cheating. We remember when they cheated in the early 2000s, managed to avoid a points deduction. I hope they crash and burn. I mean, come on, Ricky, that's
but
a
it's
bit
very
harsh.
Interesting.
Look at the predicament they're in.
Interesting language from the lawyers.
Yeah.
Very robust. And well, as Stefan Borson suggests, there is no indication of cozying up to the Premier League and making sure that the mitigation side comes into play.
Sure.
They're going to fight this, which means that when they get sanctioned, which they will, it'll be the biggest sanction that the Premier League can give them.
Download, stand well back, listen. Outspoken with White and Jordan. From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Tomorrow night, England host Brazil at Wembley. Stuart Pearce, who's in studio with Simon and myself this morning, made his debut for England against Brazil in a 1-1 friendly draw at Wembley. On the 19th of May 1987, it was the tender age of 25. Who were you up against on that occasion, Stuart?
The winger I was playing against was Muller.
Muller,
a very un-Brazilian name. But Mirandina scored the goal for them, which I remember.
Oh.
So I contributed to... I got an assist for Brazil on the day, I think. You know what I mean? Muller spun past me, went in behind me, and I went in at half-time, and Bobby Robson, I thought, hopefully he's missed it. You know, your first cap. And I sat there and he gives a team talk. We were about 8 minutes into this team talk, and I thought, brilliant, he's missed it. And then he got round to me.
And you got it.
He done you, didn't he?
Yes.
I went, yes, he did. He said, don't let it happen again.
Muller, Mirandinha, our Brazil football expert, a great friend of mine, Tim Vickery, joins us live from Brazil. Tim, Muller, Mirandinha, you remember them, right?
Yes, I do. And I also remember the long arm of Stuart Pearce helping us get a win against Brazil at Wembley in 1990. I'm sure Stuart remembers that one.
I got fan mail from me. Well, not fan mail, but people wrote to me. I handballed one off the line that got us a favourable result. And I got people wrote to me and said, you shouldn't have done that and whatever.
Really?
I said, I want to win for my country.
Of course you do.
Mr. Dean Maradona.
And the badge on that jersey, but we'll get to that in a bit. Tim, welcome, mate. Simon's with me, so too Stuart, as you can hear. Where are Brazil in the grand scheme of world football right now?
Worse than they've probably ever been. This is a bad, bad moment for Brazil. We're six rounds into World Cup qualification in South America. Brazil are down in sixth place. They have lost three in a row. That's unprecedented. They've conceded more goals than anyone else apart from the bottom two in those 10 countries. And it's a new coach. So this is a new era. What they've wanted for a long time is friendlies against European opposition. And because of the pandemic and a lot because of the Nations League, those opportunities just haven't been around. And since Russia 2018, so that's nearly 6 years, they have played one friendly against European opposition when they visited the Czech Republic in 2019. So they've really wanted games against European opposition. But this one and the one against Spain on Tuesday, they've come at an awkward time, not least because so many players have pulled out. When you think of the new coach, he's lost the two goalkeepers, Alisson and Ederson. He's lost the two centre-backs, Marquinhos and Gabriel Magalhães. And he's lost the likely captain in the midfield anchor, Casemiro. So it really, Stuart there was talking about winning his first cap against Brazil. It looks like the goalkeeper and three of the back four will be winning their first cap against England.
But I mean, in the new manager, Dorival Jr., they've got a guy who's loaded with experience. He's been in charge of Cruzeiro, Santos, São Paulo, Palmeiras, Flamengo. He's been around a bit.
He has, yeah, has more than 40, 45 years as a player and as a coach. But all of that is Brazil, all of it. And Brazilian domestic football has fallen behind a little bit. One of his big tasks, this is more important than the results, he's got to win over the likes of Vinicius Jr., Rodrigo, for example. Rodrigo of Real Madrid, he's absolutely scathing about domestic Brazilian football. Dorival Jr. is a product of domestic Brazilian football, and he is going to have to win over these names. That I think, is his most serious task over the next couple of days.
Do you think this goes deeper than just the snapshot of Brazilian football at the moment? Is it something more cultural? Because when I was a kid, my first memory of football was the 70 World Cup and the Brazil team and whatever. And the culture on the streets with the kids that are desperate to be Brazilian internationals in Brazil must have been incredible. Has that diminished over time?
It's still there. They still produce great players. There are problems here. There are problems with the way that domestic football is organised. There's also societal problems. That kind of street space where so many of those players that you played against, Stuart, they came up off the streets. And the streets in the big cities have often become too violent for that. So they've lost some of that street culture. But they still produce plenty of great players. And there's some wonderful players going to be playing England tomorrow. Part of the problem, though, is not an absolute decline. It's a relative decline. Europe has learnt how to produce talent. And when they went out to Belgium, terrific game in that World Cup 2018, there was one player on the field, the most stereotypical South American-style player on the field, low centre of gravity, absolutely unpredictable, wonderfully one-against-one situations. And it was Eden Hazard. And you know, look at some of the names that England have. Europe has learnt to produce talents. So doing what Brazil did a few years ago is no longer good enough. The game has moved on.
Tim, I mean, you say the six regards World Cup qualification. We couldn't be in a situation whereby Brazil don't qualify for a World Cup finals, could we?
Had this been any previous World Cup, yes. But with the expansion to 48 teams, no. Because the top six qualify and the seventh go into a playoff. So I really don't think they're going to have to excel at incompetence to get anywhere near not qualifying.
So England fans flocking to Wembley tomorrow night should expect to win, should they?
Well, I think England are favourites and they're more consolidated side, and that's even before you take out all of those absences that I told you about. But there is, and I'm just got off now, Jim, to do a TV show over here, and one of the things I'm having to explain to them is the European attitude to friendlies is a little bit friendly-schmendly. And quite often they're more for experimentation than anything else. But yes, I think England are favourites. And I think if you look at the two squads, apart from one or two positions, but in many positions, I think you would choose England over Brazil's. And that, as far as all of us are concerned, I think that's unprecedented.
Tim, it's always great to speak to you. Thank you so much. How's that little restaurant around the corner from you that you and I were in all these years ago? Still going?
It's very good. They're anxiously awaiting you to come and give them another big tip.
Tim Vickery in Rio. Thank you so much for that.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
The world's most dangerous download.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
England fans, no doubt, Simon, will be there in big numbers and will be wearing the England shirt. The England shirt. But now Nike and the FA, to a degree, have upset a large part of the England football nation with the St. George's flag playful update, as they're calling it. Nike have tinkered about with the flag. We spoke about this yesterday. This has now exploded. It is a full-scale drama in the background here. Nike say this: the England 2024 home kit disrupts history with a modern take on a classic. The trim in the cuffs takes its cues from the training gear worn by England's 1966 heroes, with a gradient of blues and reds topped with purple. The same colours also feature an interpretation of the flag of St. George on the back of the collar. England legend Mr. Pearce has taken this, will be interesting, but they've all got involved in this argument. Speaking on The Sun's weekly politics show, Never Mind the Ballots, Sir Keir Starmer threw in his threepenceworth.
I mean, as you know, I'm a big football fan. I go to England games, men, women's game, and the flag is used by everybody. It is a unified, it doesn't need to be changed. We just need to be proud of it. So I think they should just reconsider this and change it back.
All right.
I'm not even sure they can properly explain why they thought they needed to change in the first place. But one more thing on that. They could also reduce the price of the shirts. I think we can all get behind that.
So we'll get to the price of the shirts. Stuart, is this a shirt, as an England player, if you were playing tomorrow night, would you be happy to pull it on?
If it meant another cap for my country, 100%, Jim. But I'm really, really surprised that this hasn't been picked up on beforehand, because whenever I've been involved with England, normally they unveil the shirts to the players, to the coaching staff, all of those type of things, and ask opinion. Now, I'm surprised that someone's not picked up on it. I didn't even know it was supposed to be a take on our flag, that chevron on the back of it. Looking at it, it looks like Chrysler or something like that. I have no idea what it is. But listen, you shouldn't be tinkering with the national flag of England on
a shirt. You're a patriot of your country. Does it offend you?
It doesn't offend me, no, but I don't think it's right. I wouldn't put something on that I'm looking at and thinking, is that a logo of a car company or what it was. I didn't associate it with the Cross of St George. I really didn't.
I mean, Starmer saying, Simon, you know, they should get them back in. You know, this can't happen. They're out in general distribution out there now.
Bag on the back of a shirt now represents something in a certain way. It's an election year. You start to see a bit more substance. Emily Thornbury's come out and talked about it, and she was the one that took photographs of St George's flags outside people's houses and tried to diminish White Van Man as some sort of Neanderthal because they had that. So the irony of it shouldn't be lost.
No, but our politicians not allowed it. They're saying it as well.
Well, if there's some genuity attached to it, yeah. If there's some real substance behind what they're saying, absolutely. But if they're simply just dialing in an opportunity to be able to make themselves popular with no substance behind it, then I resent their two-penneth being put in.
Starmer sounded fairly...
Well, I'm sure he did, because they're in an election year, and I'm sure he'll sound convincing on lots of things. The point is that it is a ridiculous... It is a ridiculous reflection of what's going on. We've had these ridiculous... Football seems to think it needs to get involved in arguments it doesn't need to have. We had this ridiculous situation where it wanted to light up Wembley for every single cause and then decided it got itself into an awful situation when we had the atrocities on October the 7th and it didn't want it to put itself in the way of any real jeopardy at that time. And it is like I said yesterday, without disappearing into ridiculous hysteria, it wouldn't happen in other countries. And this idea that we have things that are valuable that we should celebrate, which is our national identity. Yes, there are certain connotations around the St. George's flags that certain people have decided to try and adopt. Well, reclaim it from them. Take it back and make it an object of pride rather than giving in to the idea that, oh, because some idiots at the EDL or a few people that have unpopular decisions thinking is somehow a reflection. Well, again, I make the point. You have got these... young 20-something marketing people sitting there with green hair deciding that we need to make sure that we represent people in an aspirational and inclusive way. Well, what the bleeding hell is aspirational and inclusive about that load of old pony? Really?
I mean...
And I'm glad that people are pushing back against it. Not because people want to be hysterical and make there are bigger things in the world to consider, but it's the insidious underlying mission creep into our society about what we need to have foisted upon us and what we should think. And if we don't think this way, then we're a bigot. Or if we don't think this way, then we're something else.
You see, there's no necessity for it. To me, Stuart, this will only change if the players push back in it. Now, do you think the players will be prepared to say... Nan, it's not for me. It's not for us. We ain't wearing it.
I think some will, some won't. You know, some
unless they get a yellow card.
Some will look at it and think, you know what, it's not for me. A lot of them will be ambivalent to it, I think, and think nothing of it.
You'd be ambivalent to it. You'd wear it.
I wouldn't turn down an international
cap. They
shouldn't
be. They can't be put in that
because
position.
Of a shirt. No, exactly. It's like everything. They went into Qatar with political questions.
In Qatar.
Yes, but they shouldn't,
they shouldn't have done.
They shouldn't have been put in that position. And that's where the FA... And let's be clear about who's at fault here. The FA. No two ways about it. End of discussion. The FA. Because Nike are a commercial entity whose job is to ensure that the products that they sell repay the huge investment they put into the sport. The big branding deals that they do, they want repayment on. So they would have merely... taken a lead from the FA about what they want, some tilt to the past and some recognition of what the colour schemes of the train. I mean, it's like listening to some Ponzi sommelier in a restaurant saying, and this metal bag has a particular brand of pear in it. Just give me the bloody wine. I don't need all the ideas about what's behind it. And this idea that his marketing is a tilt back to the England training squad is just the biggest load of old fanny I've ever heard. but the FA are the ones that are sitting there going, jobs are good'un. I mean, these are the people. These are the people that we need to be saying, what the hell are you think you're doing? Why would you create this unnecessary controversy? Why would you want to, in what is a huge tournament with huge value to it, our national team is a huge sense of pride to us, give it a rest, will you?
Jim, how has he taken the England shirt to a fancy wine bar in Mayfair? I don't know how he shoehorned that but he did.
He listens to sommeliers describing a bottle of wine. Give it a break.
It's a little bit cheeky without being impertinent. Here's the thing. Guys, we just heard from Tim Vickery out in Rio de Janeiro. Can you imagine if they'd tinkered about with the Brazil flag?
Exactly.
There's quite a lot of England fans saying Nike. Can you imagine if Nike tinkered about with the Stars and Stripes? On the US strip. Yeah. They're going to get nowhere faster, but they've got somewhere, and Simon's right. It's not all down to Nike. the FA have got a big part to play in this.
Well, the FA definitely, and I think the players or the players' committee would have seen the shirt before it was actually put out there in the ether.
Of course they would have done.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Never was there a more fitting title for a group of people, FA.
A lot of people suggesting, Simon, that it, amongst the players, and I don't know how they're coming to that. I'm looking at many messages. The players have already decided they're not going to wear it. Now, I mean, they will. I'm quite sure they will, because the horse has bolted. It's too late, is it not? They're out there. They've been in production for a while, and they're out there now. And, of course, they're with us now, and the Euros is just around the corner. Where this will end.
Well, they shouldn't be put in this. I mean, it'll end like all things in the media. Once we've got bored of it, we'll move on to the next subject. But the point is that the players won't be put in a position and shouldn't be put in a position. And there's a balance. There's a point of me that almost thinks that I don't want them in that position, because careful what kind of power you give players about what they will and won't do, because the next thing is they will and won't do the next thing that doesn't suit them.
Yeah.
You'll get the balance right. But the FA have committed a ridiculous act of self-harm, and there's no need for it. There's absolutely no need for it. And I'm glad that leading voices, irrespective of whether it's a Tory MP, and I think some of the things that Lee Anderson and Nigel Farage have said are a little bit extreme, because that's the way they go at times. But I also think that politicians speaking up on these things sort of sticks in my craw, because I don't think there's a lot of substance behind what they say in these areas.
Stu, one of many, saying, if I was a player, I'd put the cross of St George as a sticker of the cross over the
badge, transfer on it
over the back of the in front of the badge. Stuart, what's more offensive, the flag itself or the price of the strip? The redesigned shirt retailing at $124.99 for you and me. Well, for you, I wouldn't wear it, and $119.99 for kids.
Well, we could always send this kit, if we're not going to use it, send it up to Scotland for their second kit, maybe. You know, there's every chance. Well, put it this way. It's probably more offensive on the shirt for me than it is the price of the kit, because I've got a choice whether I buy that kit or not.
Yes, yeah, fair point.
But that's...
How is that £125, Simon?
Because it reflects the commercial value of how much Nike spend with the FA and the return on investment against the cost implication. It's an emotional transaction, because so many parents are pigeonholed or leverage into their boys wanting to have kits, and they want to be part of the environment, and these tournaments come around, they bring the nation together.
Yeah.
So it is huge profiteering, and when you look at £125 for a football shirt,
yeah,
it's getting extreme.
A lot of you are saying this morning the players should get together and wear old strips. Strips from the past. I mean, how they do that, I don't know.
They come to my wardrobe. I've only got old strips.
Let's go right to Stuart's house and you can select your shirt.
And suit.
Maybe it's too late for that, but it's maybe not too late for this. To stop this then from going any further than it's gone, what's got the bigger chance of a climb down? A fan boycott or a player boycott of this shirt? Because that seemingly is where we're at. England have got themselves in a bit of a mess with this.
Danger. Flammable exchanges ahead. Outspoken with White and Jordan. From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
You may have heard in Amelia's bulletin at 12:30 there, yes, the Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, has weighed in to the England shirt debate. That tinkering around with the St George's flag logo on the back of the collar, Nike's strip, of course. Let's hear what Rishi's got to say.
Obviously, I prefer the original, and my general view is that when it comes to our national flags, we shouldn't mess with them, because they're a source of pride, identity, who we are, and they're perfect as they are.
So, I mean, that's the Prime Minister, and we've heard from the Labour leader. They're all weighing in, virtually saying the same thing, Simon. It can't go on, can it? It can't stay on the shirt.
It can, and whether it will or not is another matter. But it's interesting how things gain momentum and how things have value. And obviously you've got a lot of people now. People, you know, again, I make the point that I don't have huge interest in the politician's view of this, whichever persuasion of politician we're talking about, whether it's Rishi Sunak or it's Keir Starmer or it's anyone else. But they do add value to the conversation with people like me that are dissenting about the thought processes that go into these things. So it would be an interesting climb down, an economic climb down from Nike, and an interesting sort of wet fish slap in the face for the FA's ridiculousness.
Yeah, well,
I don't know, Jim. I don't know if they will.
Regards the FA, we've approached them while we've been on air. They've come back to us and they tell us this lunchtime they have nothing to add. They've nothing to add, Stuart.
You're going to be in amongst them tomorrow, mate. The FA are giving you the red carpet treatment.
I'll ask the question directly from yourself.
Yeah. Show Simon
see
and
what
I.
The situation is.
Shall we pen the question and you can. Yeah. There's
mic me up.
There's an irony. There's an irony, and I don't mean to be mean spirited. There's an irony about the FA celebrating Terry Venables passing when they didn't celebrate him the way they should have done when he was the England manager in 96, because he was building a side and a team there, and they shepherded him out the door because of other things off the field. So there's sort of irony that, you know, I know you should celebrate someone, he should be remembered for his achievement, and I was always a fan of Venables growing up as a kid because he managed my team. But there is me, I'm being a bit mean-spirited, but I just wanted to put that out there because it shows you how hypocritical the FA as an organisation can be.
I don't want to drop you in it, Stuart, but let's drop you in it. I mean, at the time, you were with England around that time. I mean, how did the players view Terry?
I think there was a lot of love towards him, and more importantly, and to be fair, if you're talking to any person that probably wouldn't have the love to Terry Venables, it would probably be me, because one of the first things Terry done was ring me up and say I wouldn't be playing in his team in 94 when he took the job, because I was the England captain at the time. So if you're asking anyone that wouldn't be a supporter of Terry, it probably would be me, but I had to hang around.
How did you take that at the time?
I just said to him, look, if you think I'm good enough to be in your squad, I'll be there. End of. And that's what you do. You don't walk away and say, look, I'm 32, 33 years old. I've got 60-odd caps. Thank you very much for letting me know. I'll walk off into the wilderness without standing your ground and having a fight with Graham Lassau to try and to put pressure on him to stay in the side, you know? So there you go. But look, the bottom line is, over that period, that two-year period, I think I only ever saw love from his players that wanted to play for him, and I saw a very talented coach, to be quite honest with you.
Actually, on that topic, and you've taken us beautifully to it, as he goes out to get himself a glass of water, he'll be right back if you're watching on YouTube and Facebook. This rift that seems to exist, Stuart, between Ben White and playing for England. Mm. Sam Wallace in The Telegraph has said that the rift that led to White's England walkout began with a barbed comment from Steve Holland, Gareth Southgate's assistant, in front of teammates at the World Cup in Qatar in 2022. Remember, White left the camp and that was that. So that's when it started, and now it seems it's carrying on. Gareth Southgate, they say, No riff, no such thing.
There is no issue between us at all. And also should say there's never any issue with Steve Holland, because that has been sort of mentioned in articles, and I don't like that. You know, people can talk about me and say I have to accept that things get said and are false about me, and for whatever reason in this role you have to almost stomach that, but I'm not prepared for that to happen for a key member of my coaching team, because that is not the reason that Ben is unavailable for selection.
So I mean, that's Gareth giving his side of it, and he's obviously not wanting any talk of what Steve Holland's involvement may or may not have been. But Ben White, I don't know Ben White, so I don't know why he doesn't want it involved. He's a lad that he's one of the few I haven't spoken to. But he's seemingly claimed in the past he doesn't have a lot of interest in football generally. He really watches it himself. Whether that's true or not, I find it hard to believe. If a player doesn't want to play for his country, he doesn't want to play for his country. Whether you, me, or anybody else likes it or not, Stuart.
That's a personal choice. I mean, some revere playing for their country. I always did, you know. If others don't want to play or don't hold great weight to playing for their country, see it as an occupational, that's totally their call. I wouldn't suggest that everyone should have a burning ambition to play for their country. In this sole scenario, I don't know Ben White, but I know Steve Holland and I know Gareth Southgate, and I know it'd probably take a fair bit to fall out with those two, because they're just good people.
I've known Steve Holland from years back, even had a meal or two out with him on occasion. He's an extremely mild-mannered, good pro.
Indeed.
So I do find it's one that we're not, it doesn't ring true, Simon. We're not really getting the true story here, I don't think.
Well, there's balances. Do we need to? I mean, Stuart says he doesn't want to play for his country. Obviously, there's a polar opposite reaction from when he was called up 3 years ago when he was at Brighton to where he is now. And he has that right to change his mind. You know, my observation on it is it's an honour to play for your country. You're in a brilliant sport that affords you such wonderful returns economically and for your life. And playing for your country should be at the pinnacle of it. If he doesn't think that, the thing that always draws people to it is the return from Qatar and what's gone on there. And that's the part that people feel that we should be entitled to know. From a media point of view, of course, it's great copy. It's interesting. It's intriguing. Mm. For me, it's if he doesn't want to play for his country, I don't really feel like wasting my time really opining on him too much.
Because
if
he doesn't want...
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. It's his loss. He'll look back on it maybe one day or maybe he won't and realise that it was a phenomenal opportunity and phenomenal privilege and phenomenal honour to be called up to play for your country and to be part of a squad that may go on to win a European champion. If he doesn't want it, he doesn't want it.
I mean, there's an enormous competitive battle going on between Manchester City, Liverpool, Arsenal. He's in amongst it with Arsenal. Do you think playing for your country means as much today as it did when you played, Stuart?
Playing for... When I played, and this is a personal opinion, Jim, playing for my country means more than anything I ever done for a club. End of.
Pulling that shirt on.
Bobby Robson said to me on my first... He addressed his group, and I remember it like it was yesterday at Burnham Beaches. He said, "This is the best football team you'll ever play for. It's England."
And was he right?
You're damn right he was right. And what it means to the rest of the world that want to aspire to wear the same shirt that you might get to run out in.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think today's modern day player thinks that, Stuart? I know we can't do the thinking or talking for them.
Some do, Jim. Some do. I was in the dressing room 30 years ago with people that probably didn't have a similar drive to represent their country as I did at the time. So let's not get washed away with this rose-tinted world that everyone was a Terry Butcher in the dressing room. It wasn't like that at all, you know? So it's the same now. We've got some brilliant, brilliant patriots that turn up. And I'll throw Maguire's name into the mix on that as well. The flack that he's taken in around his club form, he's this form, he's that form, he's never pulled away from England once. He's never thought to himself, you know, for an easy life, I might just, you know, throw an injury in and not turn up or whatever. That shows to me more than beating your chest and all this sort of thing. Mm. It's people that turn up that want to be part of it.
Would you do what Gareth's doing today? If you were England manager, Stuart, if Ben White says, "I don't want to be part of it," you don't want to be part of it.
End of. But then again, let's not lose track of the fact Paul Scholes turned around and said, "Look, I don't want to play for England anymore or be considered to play for England."
Sure did the same.
And various other players, exactly that, have done the same. But so yeah. What makes Ben White different to them and to them and to them? I don't know.
Sure.
Because they achieved something in their careers and they were at the very top of their trade. Mm. And so it's a very different dynamic. With due respect to Ben White, he hasn't won anything yet. Shearer's won one Premier League, Scholes played at Man United, and they were established England players that came to the end of their careers and changed their minds. Yeah. Ben White hasn't even begun his international career.
That's why, Simon, I always look and say the entity that is the England football team is bigger than you as an individual. So you have to give yourself to them.
Call him up. I wouldn't have even... If Southgate must know what's going on, I wouldn't have even entertained the conversation. Mm. Done. Finished. Done. You've made your position clear. You came back from Qatar for whatever reason. End of discussion. Mm. One strike, you're out. We only want people in this environment that want to win championships with us.
Yep. Yeah. Okay, so England going against Brazil tomorrow night without Ben White.
The world's most dangerous download. Outspoken with White and Jordan. From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. Please leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts from. We're back Monday to bring you the best of the show.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Confidence starts with loving who you are.
And when your skin feels nourished and glows on the outside, you naturally radiate confidence from the inside. Give your skin a glow up with Osea's clinically proven Mega Moisture Duo. This ultra-hydrating body care features two of Osea's best sellers, Undaria Algae Body Oil and Undaria Collagen Body Lotion. These seaweed-powered heroes use skincare-level ingredients normally reserved for your face for results you can see and confidence you can feel. Osea has been making clean, clinically proven seaweed-infused face and body care products for over 28 years. This luxurious skincare is vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral certified, so you never have to choose between your values and your best skin. Glow from the inside out. Get 10% off your first order with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code GLOW.